This is a reading of a lecture cycle by Rudolf Steiner entitled The Apocalypse of St. John, Lectures on the Book of Revelation. This is the last lecture in the cycle, Lecture 12, given in Nuremberg on the 30th of June, 1908. A certain unease concerning the destiny of mankind in the future could come over one who enters with feelings into the thoughts which occupied us at the close of our last lecture. A picture of this future of mankind had to be brought before you yesterday, which on the one hand was great and powerful, filling one with bliss, showing the future condition of the man who has understood the mission of our present age upon the earth, who has received the Christ Spirit, and has thereby been able to keep pace with the necessary spiritualization of our earth, a glorious, blessed picture of those men who are called in exoteric Christianity the redeemed, or, not quite appropriately, the elect. But the opposite picture had also to be put before you, the picture of the abyss, in which is found a mankind which is not in a position to receive the Christ Spirit, which remained imprisoned in matter, which excluded itself, so to speak, from the spiritualizing process leading into the future, which has fallen away from the spiritualized earth, and in a certain sense, apart from it, is advancing toward a frightful fate. When the beast with the seven heads and ten horns glowers at us from the abyss, led astray by the other frightful being, the two-horned beast, this picture gives rise to fear and horror, and many might ask, is it not hard and unwise on the part of Providence to lead a number of men to such a frightful fate, and in a way to condemn them to the abyss of evil? And the question might arise, would it not have been more fitting for a wise Providence to have averted this frightful fate from the very beginning? In answer to these questions, we might, to begin with, say something abstract, theoretical, and it already signifies a great deal for one who can grasp this theoretical statement in his feeling. It is extremely wise of Providence to take care that a number of men should be faced with this terrible fate as a possibility. For if it were impossible for man to sink into the abyss of evil, then what on the one hand we call love, and on the other freedom, would also be unattainable for him. To the occultist, freedom is inseparably connected with the concept of love. Love would be impossible for man, and freedom would be impossible for man, without the possibility of sailing down into the abyss. A man unable of his own free decision to choose good or evil would be a being only led on a leading string to a good which must be attained of necessity, and who had no power to choose the good of his own fully purified will by the love which springs from freedom. If it were impossible for man to follow in the trail of the monster with the two horns, it would also be impossible for him to follow God out of his own individual love. It was in accordance with a wise providence that the possibility of freedom was given to a mankind which has been developing through our planetary system, and this possibility of freedom could be given on no other condition than that man himself was to make the free choice between good and evil. But this is only an empty theory, you might say, and man rises but slowly to the point where he not only says this in words and accepts it in moments of speculation as a kind of explanation, but also experiences it in his feeling. Seldom does man now rise to the thought, I thank you, O wise Providence, that you have made it possible for me to bring you a love which is not forced, but springs up free in my own breast, that you do not force me to love you, but that you have given me the choice of following you. Nevertheless, man has to rise to this feeling if he wishes really to feel this theoretical explanation. We can, however, offer additional comfort, or rather another quieting assurance, from a clairvoyant observation of the world. Yesterday we said that only those who are already today entangled in some way in the prongs of the two-horned beast, which leads men to the practice of black magic, have an almost inexorable leaning toward the abyss. And even for such as already now fall into the arts of black magic, it will still be possible to turn back in the future. Those who do not come at all into any contact with black magic arts, parenthesis, and this for the time being is the case with most people, close parenthesis, may have some tendency in the period following the war of all against all toward final evil, but the possibility in the future of turning back again and following the good will be far greater than the compulsion unconditionally to follow evil. From these lectures it may be seen that for those who today turn to a spiritual conception of the world in order to live beyond the Great War into the Sixth Epoch, parenthesis, which is represented by the opening of the seals, close parenthesis, there is the possibility to receive the Christ principle. They will be able to receive the spiritual elements which are laid down in the age signified by the community at Philadelphia, and subsequently they will manifest a strong tendency toward becoming spiritual. Those who turn today to a spiritual view receive a powerful disposition to enter upon the upward path. One must not fail to recognize how important it is that even at the present time a number of persons should not turn a deaf ear to the so-called anthroposophical world conception, which is bringing to mankind, in a fully conscious manner, the first germs of spiritual life, whereas formerly this took place unconsciously. That is the important thing, that this portion of mankind should take in the first conscious tendencies toward the upward movement. Through a group of people dedicating themselves today to the foundation of a great brotherhood, which will live over into the epoch of the seven seals, help will be provided for those others who today still turn a deaf ear to the teachings of spiritual science. For the present, we have still to go through many incarnations of the present souls before the great war of all against all, and again up to the decisive point after the great war. And afterward, in the epoch of the seals, we also have to go through many changes, and men will often have the opportunity to open their hearts to the spiritual world conception, which is today flowing through the anthroposophical movement. There will be many, many opportunities, and you must not imagine that future opportunities will only be such as they are today. The way in which we are able to make the spiritual view of the world known to others is still very feeble. Even if a man were now to speak in such a way that his voice were to sound forth directly like the fire of the Spirit, that would be feeble as compared with the possibilities which will exist in later and more developed bodies in order to direct our fellow men to this spiritual movement. When mankind as a whole will have developed higher and higher in future ages, there will be very different means through which the spiritual conception of the world will be able to penetrate into men's hearts, and the most fiery word today is small and weak compared with what will work in the future to give all souls the possibility of the spiritual conception of the world, all the souls now living in bodies in which no heart beats for this spiritual conception of the world. We are at the beginning of the spiritual movement, and it will grow. It will require much obduracy and much hardness to close the heart and mind to the powerful impressions of the future. The souls now living in bodies, which have the heart to hear and feel anthroposophy, are now preparing themselves to live in bodies in the future, in which power will be given them to serve their fellow men, who up to that time had been unable to feel this heartbeat within them. We are only preparing for the preparers, as yet nothing more. The spiritual movement is today but a very small flame. In the future it will develop into a mighty spiritual fire. When we bring this other picture before our souls, when we let it enter right into our feelings, then there will live in us a very different feeling and a very different possibility of knowledge concerning this fact. Today it is what we call black magic, into which men can, in a certain way, fall consciously or unconsciously. Those who now live out their lives and remain quite untouched by the spiritual conception of the world, who live in their comfortable everyday torpor and say, "What does it matter to me what these dreaming anthroposophists say?" These have the least possibility of entering into the circles of black magic. In their case, they are now only neglecting the opportunity to help their fellow men in the future in their efforts to attain the spiritual life. For themselves, they have not yet lost much. But those who today are beginning in an unlawful way to take up the spiritual life are really taking up into themselves, in the very first beginnings, the germs of something one might call black magic. There are very few individuals today who have already fallen into black magic in the frightful sense, in which the horrible art of mankind must really be spoken of, in which this horrible art of mankind must really be spoken of. You will best understand that this really is so if I give you but a slight indication of the way in which black magic is systematically cultivated. Then you will see that you may search high and low among all your acquaintances, and you will find no one of whom you could believe that he was already inclining to such arts. All the rest is fundamentally only the purest dilettantism, which may be easily got rid of in future ages. It is bad enough that in our day things are sometimes praised with the intention to defraud people, things which in a certain sense are also the beginning of the art of black magic. It is also bad that certain ideas are percolating, which, although they do not at all belong to the black art, nevertheless mislead people. These are the ideas which rule the world today in certain circles, and which can flourish amidst materialistic thought, but which, although not without danger, will not be irreparable in the next epochs. Only when a man begins to practice the ABC of black magic is he on the dangerous path to the abyss. The ABC consists in the pupil of a black magician being taught to destroy life quite consciously, and in doing so to cause as much pain as possible, and to feel a certain satisfaction in it. When the purpose is to stab or cut into a living being with the intention of feeling pleasure in that being's pain, that is the ABC of the black arts. We cannot touch upon the further stages, but you will find it horrible enough when you are told that the beginner in black magic has to cut and stab into living flesh, not as the vivisector cuts, that is already bad enough, but the principle of vivisection finds its overthrow in the vivisector himself, because in Kamaloka he will himself have to feel the pain he has caused his victims, and for this reason will leave vivisection alone in the future. But he who systematically cuts into flesh and feels satisfaction in it begins to follow the precipitous path of black magic, and this opens the way for him to draw closer and closer to the being described as the two-horned beast. This seductive being is of quite a different nature from man. It originates from other world periods. It has acquired the tendencies of other world periods, and will feel deep satisfaction when it meets with beings such as those evil ones who have refused to take up inwardly the good which can flow from the earth. This being has been unable to receive anything from the earth. It has seen earth evolution come, but has said, "I have not progressed with the earth in such a way that I can gain anything from earthly existence." This being could only have got something from the earth by being able to gain the rulership at a certain moment, namely when the Christ principle descended to the earth. If the Christ principle had been strangled in the germ, if Christ had been overcome by the adversary, it would have been possible for the whole earth to succumb to the Sorath principle. This, however, did not take place, and so this being has to be content with the refuse of mankind, who have not inclined toward the Christ principle, who have remained embedded in matter, they in the future will form his cohorts. Now, in order to understand these cohorts more clearly, we must consider two ideas, which in a certain sense may serve as a key to certain chapters of the Apocalypse. We must study the ideas of the, quote, first death, close quote, and the, quote, second death, close quote. What is the first death and what is the second death of man, or of mankind? We must form a clear picture of the ideas which the writer of the Apocalypse connected with these words. To this end, we must once more recall to mind the elementary truths concerning human existence. Consider a human being of the present day, one just like each of you. He lives in such a way that from morning, when he awakes, until evening when he falls asleep, he consists of four principles: the physical body, etheric body, astral body, and the ego. We also know that during his earthly existence, man works from his ego upon the lower principles of his being, and that during the earth existence he must succeed in bringing the astral body under the control of the ego. We know that the earth will be followed by its next incarnation, Jupiter. When man has reached Jupiter, he will appear as a different being. The Jupiter man will have thoroughly worked from his ego upon his astral body. And when, today, we say, the earth man who stands before us in the waking condition has developed physical body, etheric body, astral body, and ego, we must say of the Jupiter man, he will have developed physical body, etheric body, astral body, and ego, but he will have changed his astral body into spirit self. He will live at a higher stage of consciousness, a stage which may be characterized as follows. The ancient, dim, picture consciousness of the moon, which existed also in the first epochs of the earth consciousness, will again be there with its pictures as clairvoyant consciousness, but it will be furnished with the human ego, so that with this Jupiter consciousness, man will reflect as logically as he does now with his day consciousness on earth. The Jupiter man, therefore, will possess clairvoyant vision of a low degree. Part of the soul world will lie open to him. He will perceive the pleasure and pain of those around him in pictures which will arise in his imaginative consciousness. He will therefore live under entirely different moral conditions. Now imagine that as a Jupiter man you have a human soul before you. The pain and pleasure of this soul will arise in pictures before you. The pictures